You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The reason it's very important is because if you make the person a Chodesh Ein Beis Sakana, it gives you a lot of leniencies when it comes to Shabbos, because a guy is allowed to perform a Malachi Deraisa for you on Shabbos Chodesh if you're a Chodesh Ein Beis Sakana, which means if you have to be driven to a hospital to undergo a procedure, or a procedure has to be done on Shabbos which involves Malachi Deraisas, a guy can do it for you, a guy is a doctor, a guy is a nurse, or you know, a guy is a driver. If they were not chayim, shein bas sakana, then you would have a tremendous difficulty. And many of the procedures they have in fertility today require basically sometimes a week or more taking hormones and other stuff, and they have to get it, and they can't have a day off for Shabbos or for Yom Tov. So for that reason, that they already categorize this chayim shein bas sakana. And therefore the mitzvah also rapi rapi applies to it, and the mitzvah kibbutz shalom applies to it. So they gave their rabbinical sanction to all this technology involved in genetic manipulation. Now, the fact of the matter is, the first thing that became available to them, the earliest, you ask me how far we go back, was in the beginning of the 1900s, was artificial insemination. Now, artificial insemination, what are they doing, artificial insemination? The only thing that they do is they realize, after checking the wife's body and the husband's body, that there's a problem when it comes to the sperm quality connecting with the eggs. And in the artificial insemination, what they basically do, for instance, there are some sperm, interesting enough, that have a certain liquid on them that the wife's egg is allergic to, and therefore rejects the sperm from penetration. What can you do to fix that? So we're able now, and you have to think of the size of the sperm and the egg we're talking about over here. And I take a little pencil point on a piece of paper, they're even smaller than that. And basically, you take the sperm into a laboratory, they give it a bath. They wash off that liquid that's on top of the sperm, and they clean the sperm off in the laboratory. What they then do is, since that was the problem, and so in the artificial insemination mechanism, they then take this cleansed sperm and they put it into the wife's body via a pipette, putting it through the vaginal canal, through the cervical os, ultimately into the actual uterus. At that point in time, the sperm, which doesn't have this liquid anymore, could then meet with the wife's egg in the normal fallopian tubes. It won't be rejected anymore because it doesn't have that liquid. So artificial insemination was a major, major technique initially. And in fact, Chazal, interesting enough, I always show my students, Chazal thought about artificial insemination as a possibility in Talmudic times, which means thousands of years ago. There's a Gemara in Chagiga of this Nis'ambra Bambati, you know, where you have a man being forced to somehow eject sperm in a hot bath. And in those days, men and women used to use them interchangeably. So imagine a man accidentally, or maybe purposely, depositing his sperm in a bathhouse, and then a woman coming in, and then somehow the water itself, yeah, the virgin birth. That I sometimes say that maybe that's how he was born. You might joke, but it could be that's how it happened. This Amber Bambati. But the fact of the matter is that the woman's body soaked in the sperm in this water, and the sperm was still alive, and the sperm went in and impregnated. The Gemara has the expression, this Amram Bati, and they ask the Sheila, is it possible for a girl who physiologically is a Basula to be pregnant? And what happens if she married a Kain as a Basula, or as a Kain Gobba as a Basula, and all of a sudden a couple months down the line she's pregnant? And they were able to ascertain she didn't have any sexual desire because the basula was still there. So how can you have a basula who's pregnant? So the Gemara says that she was misabe ba'ambati. And Chazal tell a very negative story, a terrible thing that happened to Yemiya Hanavi. That people used to hate Yemiya because he used to tell them the truth. People didn't want to hear the truth. And one day he was in a bathhouse. Now the banditin came in, and in the bathhouse they beat him up. And they forced him basically to have a Yitzias Hazara into the water. A couple of hours later, or whatever it is, unbeknownst to his daughter, she went to take a bath in the bathhouse. Yeah. And the Zera came in, and she was Nis'ambra from her father without realizing it. she got pregnant, and the Ravon Shlomo, since he was a Navi, spoke to Menahu and told them, your daughter was not Mizana, but I want you to realize what happened over here. So she was Miss Amrabati from her father Zera, and the fact is, as Ramesha points out from this story, the Ravon Shlomo said in the Navua that is quoted by the Chalkis Machalkik in Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer, as a kosher child, which means since it was not done with any sexual connection, the child is not a mamzer. There was no relationship of incest between a husband, between a father and a daughter, as an ish kosher, who is created by that union, Ben Sira, the famous Ben Sira who wrote the Sefer Ben Sira. Ben Sira therefore was the son / grandson of Yamiyobichin, himself and his daughter, this Amber Bambati. The Banisham said that since Ben Sira is a Ben Maila, learn with him not only Teres HaNigla, learn with him even Teres HaNistar, the beautiful Chalkas Mechaykir in Ibn Ezer that talks about the whole story. But from that story, the Bach, the Taz, later on the Chalkas Mechaykir, and ultimately the Beis Shmuel Paskin or Moshe Paskins, that therefore the Yichus of the father is determined as being the semen donor, the DNA donor. And in this case you see that he was considered Yemio's child. If it's in a normal circumstance, we don't have this craziness. It's really artificial insemination taking place over here. So in artificial insemination, where there's been no beer to create the child, the father would be Mekai in the midst of Peruvu through this, if you get a boy and girl this way. Number two is the yichus of the father, when it comes to Kohen Levi Yisrael, will be transferred to the child as well, and Yerusha Kedem, which means you don't need physiological connection with Maisabiyah to have the yichus basically transferred over. And that was the psak of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe held that way. And the Taz.
The Satmar Rebbe.
I know. I'm going to get to the Satmar Rebbe shortly. But the fact of the matter is that's the way Rav Moshe paskind. But he used the Taz and the Bach in the Shulchan Aruch to deal with this. They're talking about what happens if a married woman lays on bed sheets she had spread in her house in a bedroom for a male guest who left. And she got tired and she lay down in the bed. He wasn't there anymore, he had left already. He left the tip, yeah. And she didn't realize that he had left some Zera over there, and she was only wearing underwear. And somehow she got Miss Abra from his, it's unlikely, but it happened. So what happens over here is the Taz and the Bach Paskin, and the Rav Moshe relies upon this, that the child's Miyuchas after the one who left the Zera, but since there was never a sexual union, there's no din of mamzerut, there's no din of adultery. And the reason Moshe had to do this is because he has a tshuva, fascinating tshuva, of a woman and a husband who were married for many years and have children. And she was very, very distraught. So without asking her husband, she went to a sperm bank and she asked them, she wanted to be, she was inseminated with a person's sperm from a sperm bank artificially. And a couple months down the line, she had to tell her husband what she did because she realized she can't hide, her belly is growing over here. So she told him, and he almost passed out. So he says, he was convinced she's an adulteress, the husband, and the baby's a mamzer. So Golofin said, Rav Moshe, to ask Rav Moshe, what's kenechtum? So Rav Moshe wrote that this is an historical tshuva, that which the Lubavitch Rebbe, not Lubavitch, the Satmar Rebbe dealt with. So Rav Moshe wrote in the tshuva that since she got this as an insemination artificially from a laboratory, there was no maisabiyah, it's not adultery, because there's been no sexual union, and therefore the child is not a mamzer, and therefore halacha lamasa, that worry that you have, and he quoted the makaris I just gave you, the Bach and the Taz and everybody else. He then said, however, you're not the tata. So you don't even have a chiv, the derais or midir rabbanim, to give child support for this child, unless the Bista Helegayid, Megadro Ben Chavero. But the fact is, when you get a sperm from the sperm bank, you never know the identity of the man. Even if you get someone who's supposedly Jewish, you'll never know what the identity is. But the fact of the matter is, Ramesha, if Akasha left the child, she was able to stay married to her husband. So when the Satmar Rav heard this Pesach Ramesha, he went wild. He went wild. Yeah. Uh-huh. And what happened is, he paskind, based upon the Diyuk in the Ramban, in his Perish L'Chumash, he points out, the Tzatmar Rebbe points out, if you look in the East of other Arayos, the Torah phrases it in a certain way of, you know, basically the concept of via, be megala erva kedema, sexual union. When it comes to adultery, the Torah says, "Lo tzitein shchiftecha lazara," only by adultery. So the Ramban says, transferring your zera from a man to a married woman is adultery. You'll see the shrift of the zera. So he said, from the Ramban of Chumash, I learned that even if it's done artificially, it's a din of adultery, deraisa, and the child is a mamzer deraisa. So you can imagine these two gedolim living simultaneously as mefrekta Moshe says kosher avayv and kosher akin. This mefrekta satna rebbe, the child is a mamzer, and the wife is an adulteress. But it became very heated. For those who still remember, Rav Moshe's life was threatened by the Satmar Hasidim. The Mamish, they were raided.
They burnt it in effigy.
I mean, you're talking about protests. Forget about Notary Karta. They Mamish, they threatened Rav Moshe, but Rav Moshe never backed down. And Rav Moshe then wrote subsequent Shulvis in where he said, I never gave a lechatchila permissibility for artificial insemination utilizing donor sperm. I never gave that. But in this case, to be mata and eshes ishla baila, I wanted to give a psak. But don't take my words that it's called AID, using donor sperm is permissible lechatchila. AIH, which is a husband's sperm, is unquestionably, you can do that. That's kibush ailam, if you have to come to that. But that was the first thing that was available in the marketplace. Go back to the early 1900s. Later on, they developed the technology of what's called IVF, in vitro fertilization. And there were they able to harvest the sperm from the male and basically harvest the eggs from a female and combine them for husband and wife in a laboratory. And there they couldn't fix it by just, you know, cleaning up the sperm and the egg outside. Here there was actual blockages. So in the fallopian tube, the egg and sperm would never ever come together. So they therefore felt they're going to do it in a laboratory. And in a laboratory, as I pointed out before, in 5 days, once the nuclei come together, they basically undergo cell splitting, mitosis. And by the fifth day, it develops in a laboratory into the same type of blastocyst, which is a totally cell structure that's called a stem cell, the most powerful stem cell that exists. Placing your zera in a married woman.
But the terminology
of the Torah is shechaftecha. You have to see the Ramban inside. The Ramban's taich of the what of that pasuk.
The Ramban is explicit on this?
Yeah, pretty explicit. But as you know, Ramosha's answer is? Ramosha said back, because there were a lot of counter, he says, when a mafarish, whether it's a rishon, acharon, a perish, and chunish, you don't paskim halacha based upon perushe hamikra. You paskim halacha based upon divrei haposkim, rishonim and achreinim ukedim, how they dealt with the issue. So my tshuva, I quoted the Taz, I quoted the Bach, I quoted this rishon and that rishon, and I quoted this. So I use classical paskim who are dealing with halacha lamaaseh to come to my conclusion. You're calling to a Ramban, a machin adik, with the pusik and whatever it's in the Ramban, and coming to a chumrah. So when I have to look at that and I look at mine, there's no question my way is the way the halacha is. Zayin the Rebbe is the Zayin Gezutten Shtark, but this is kind, you're not, that's not the way Paiskim or Isik in Psak halacha. They based upon tradition of Psak, they're based upon Derushas and Midrashim when it comes to the Lashon of the Torah itself, and especially when the Seisa Paiskim, a Mefarish and Lechumah surely can be looked upon as a bigger authority than quite obviously what it says in the Paiskim. So Moshe never backed down. Moshe kept that psak. But I will tell you honestly, in the world of psak halacha, a god like Rav Waldenberg, he said, it might be a Suffolk mom's, there was a lot of talk in the metaphysical world, and the basic decision was to dissuade people not to rely upon Moshe, l'chila b'devet, stay away from the AID, and not to get involved with it. There's no question there was the reason I'm saying this to you is because some of the fertility labs around the world today took this Ramesh's Bedi'evin and Zegamachos and Kulachachila. So they have literature in their offices that when you read it, they're going to tell you AID is a Lechachila, and they call Ramesh Halton, this is a Lechachila. I once told this to Rabbi Tendler, because you know we debated many times. So I said to him, if you want to have a real cause, the fight, you know, I'll join you with the cause.
We got to make sure that the fertility labs around the world don't quote Yishver, holding the ideas of Lechachila and only B'deved, because they're all promulgating. They want to have you get pregnant. And in fact, it was a big problem. Some doctors of antiquity, to make sure that you're pregnant, because they want to have a positive thing, because they want to get a good rating and other things, and when it comes to insurance monies, they used to either telling the couple, not telling the couple, add in another man's sperm, sometimes their own sperm, to guarantee, if the husband's sperm is a shela, to guarantee pregnancy. And the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is the baby's not going to be created from two different types of sperm. It's either the husband or the other. So the fact of the matter is they used to play that game. And when they found out, how did they find out people playing the game? Because when some couples or white couples had black children being born to them, or vice versa, they then realized this epis nishpadu. So at that time, a new heksha came into existence. The OK was the first heksha agency to say, we're not going to have people trained. They give hashkacha to me this, that when you give your sperm and egg into a fertility laboratory, we're going to teach them how to basically put special little kalim around them with locks that they have, like a mashgiach has, and they're going to know in the laboratory how you do the procedure, so they will watch and observe to make sure this man's sperm is put together with the other man's wife's eggs, and they don't play games. So the first one, to give hashkacha to me this, on IVF or procedures, they were smart enough with the Star K laboratory, meaning Star K rabbi from Baltimore, Heidemann. And that became the standard. All from couples today will not go to fertility labs, especially if they're using IVF, unless they know there is men or women who have been trained. There's an institute in Eretz called PUA, very famous institute.
Right. They put the
hetsch
on the baby.
They put the hetsch on the baby. So PUA develops certain types of containing vessels that basically speaking are tamper-proof to allow the mashkich or mashkichah, male or female, whoever's been in charge, that they can make sure the laboratories don't play any games. So this is a new hetsch that exists, but it was implemented because of the games doctors were playing.
Another question. What if the woman is not married?
So that question was posed to Rav Arbach and Rav Yosher a long time ago. So I'll tell you the answer that they gave.
What is the question?
Now the question, yes, is the shela of using donor sperm is a shela if it's an ashes ish, because then it's a shela of adultery. And mamzeres according to the Satmar Rebbe. But today, Nebuch, we have a lot of girls and guys who are not getting married, who are still Nebuch in the world of singles, and there's a whole world of singles on the west side. Yeah. And a lot of these girls, after a period of time, say to themselves, but I want to be a mommy, but I just can't stand the guys that are around me. So some of them found out, they know that, you know, they can get that they don't have any problems of AID if they're not married. So therefore, even the soccer could not, you know, say that committed adultery or did anything when it comes. So therefore, halacha lamas, as a single girl, not as a married girl. So they go to the sperm banks. And yeah. I know some from girls who did that, and they basically were inseminated, and they have now boys and girls created by somebody who's not their husband. They don't know the identity.
How do they know that the baby that they have now is not from the guys that they don't like?
It could be.
Not living with them.
But guess what? That would be the biggest joke on the face of the earth. But that's a sub.
Mentioned about the sperm on top of the sperm, like two different or three different ones.
Yeah.
What's the definition then of Shema Nasa Ultrasando?
That's something else. That's a question of whether or not once you're already pregnant, is there a possibility of your body, of a woman's body, producing an egg despite that normally when she's in pregnancy she doesn't have eggs. So whether or not she can produce another egg and the sperm will come along and impregnate that, so you'll have one fetus squashing the other fetus. But that's a miyut sheba miyut. That's why the Gemara tells us in Yevamis, where a mei was makbid on miyut and therefore made you basically mishamish with a tampon or something else to prevent birth. The Chacham were not chayshis for that. Shomer b'sayim Hashem. That's a very unusual phenomenon. Yes, doctor.
So what do you do? What do we recommend when a man has a low sperm count and he can't
So the answer, what we do is, first let me just, I just want to finish with this, and then I'll come to your question. So when it comes to your question, so the Shayla was posed to Rav Arbach and Rav Yoshev, can girls who want to have children do this if they can't find their Baal Shem, whatever? So they pointed out, on a technical legal basis, the problems we had with an Ashes Ish doesn't apply. So even the Satma could not say there's anything when it comes to the kashas of the babe and the kashas of yourself. The only problem is they said hashkafically, that's not the way the Rabban Hashem wanted you to create children. And what's the raya? He says, Al ken yazav adam es aviv imo, v'davak b'ishto, v'hoyu l'basa echad, and Rashi comments, push basa echad, when the zera av and the aim come together, they become a bas echad. So they said, the hashkafas of Torah was, it should be child born of a husband-wife loving relationship. That was the way Hashem wanted the procreation to take place. Not just the stammas, I just go randomly and just grab semen and sperm, you know, and just impregnate yourself. So hashkafically they felt it's a problem, not halachically. Number two is, they said, it's bad enough, it's difficult to get a shidduch when a child's born from a normal husband-wife relationship. Imagine trying to find a shidduch from a child for a girl who is a single girl. What lashon hara people going to have, who knows who she was mezana with behind the scene, maybe she had relationships with a married man, except, you know, the lashon hara that's going to never be upon her and this child, if it's not difficult under normal circumstances to find shidduchim, so they felt you're not putting yourself in a good matzav when it comes to finding shidduchim for kids in the future. But the child is a kosher child. And hashkafically, there's a problem, but halachically...
if it's a boy, it's a bachor, so who's going to be paying to him?
That's the problem. First of all, you don't know if it's good. Well, it's vis-a-vis for her. The fact of the matter is, halach lamas, we paskin, that at the end of the day, the remark quotes, they used to have a minig. Even when you knew where the father was, but the father died, whatever it is, they used to put a little necklace on the boy saying, Eina Padui, and when he became a bar mitzvah bach, he was paid to himself. The Ramah quotes a Sheminig in the Halacha's opinion of Ben. So that's the way, but let me get back now to his Shaila.
He said that, you know, he could divorce his wife. And to do a high fish on the side, she remarried it even before she had the baby. Yeah. And except for a coin, that would be a good solution.
Yeah. So let me get to his question. So for your question, what we have today in the world of medicine is we have, let's say for instance, after doing a true thorough workup of a man who has infertility problems, so let's say theoretically speaking, they found out that of all the millions of sperm that guys produce, they were only able to find one viable sperm that might have that would have a chance to impregnate his wife. To not blow up the chalas, they're able to do what's called micro-injection, which is very popular in the Hasidic world today. Because for some reason they have big problems of not having too many sperm that are good, and they can find one or two. So they're able to, with micro-injection, take one sperm and insert it into the egg artificially. And the chiddush is, when you think of the size of what you're dealing with, and you have to have equipment that's not going to squash the egg, whatever it is. That micro injection, as soon as the sperm enters into the egg basically, and they combine the nuclei.
Where do they inject?
They inject the sperm directly into the egg, artificially.
Through where?
They have a special tool.
Micro pipettes.
That are able to take the sperm and push it into the egg. In fact, some eggs have a zona pellucida that's very hard. So, and it can't be penetrated by normal sperm. They're able to do what's called zona drilling now, which means drill on the zona pellucida to make little holes, like a Con Edison. So therefore, the sperm have now entry points. And once the sperm comes in, the egg was programmed that it shuts all hatchets and all doors, even the ones that were drilled, so another sperm shouldn't come in and be makalkal b'gan samaisa. So that's what they usually do today, micro-injection plus zona drilling, when you have very limited sperm available to play with.
How about if someone has antibodies to the woman?
So I pointed out sperm washing. Sperm washing is done. I mentioned sperm baths before. That's another thing that we do. So this was in the early world of what we call in medicine, this was the beginning of genetic engineering when it comes to engineering the creation of children, when it comes to Kiddush Olam. And as I pointed out, halacha lamatza, Rav Poskim were of the opinion, even the Satmar Rebbe, when it came to IVF, husband and wife, he had no problem. The only debate between him and Rav Moshe is, when it comes to harvesting the sperm to do the IVF, should you basically do it at home with special collection devices and bring the sperm to the laboratories, or should this be done in the doctor's office? They give the husband and wife a special room so they can get a hold of the sperm, samples quickly. How you harvest the sperm? Do you harvest the sperm by the man wearing a condom, which normally is not allowed, but for sperm collection it would be allowed? Or do you do coitus interruptus, which means you're dosh mi bifnim, and you're back inside, you pull out, and you have a bottle, collection bottle. All those methodologies were given the stamp of approval by the poskim. There's no question that there are poskim bimak to that, for tzar approval, and hashchas zerin, all the sperm tests to try to figure out what's the problem, that sperm is never used for zera. So it ends up being hashchas zera, so they have a gemara. In Masechti Zavamas, we learned a couple of months ago, you forgot about it. What's interesting is there used to be surgical procedures, Bezman HaChazal, for men who had holes in their penis and such, that they used to be able to close the wounds. And basically close the wounds so that the zera would come out from the side, would come out from the front. They use special insects. I once saw this, it's still done today in certain parts of the world. They can close the wound by putting a certain insect that you put on the wound, and it puts its claws in, and it closes up the opening, and then they just cut the head of the insect off, but the stitching of the insect. So, Bezman HaGemara, they had those procedures. The Gemara Yevamos describes it, and the Gemara says that therefore a guy who was a krishavcha and had a hole, and you were able to close the hole, and then you were able to see the zera comes out normally, you've cured him, and the Isa lo yivol kreshav is cured. So the Gemara had one problem. He can't have beer with a normal Bas Yisrael until you know he's no longer kreshavcha. So how do you know, if he doesn't have beer, that the zera is coming out the normal way? So the Gemara had to give you different artificial mechanisms to stimulate the guy in order that he should be mighty zera to see that the problem has been fixed. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva upon this. And Rav Moshe says, what do we see from over here? That the zera that was taken out artificially, or aroused artificially, to show that they fixed the wound, that zera was levatala, but since the purpose was rapi rapi to marapa the person, so being motzi zera levatala for the purposes of facilitating refu is no longer hotzal zera levatala, it's been done for a tachlis, even though it's not used to produce the charm. So Rav Moshe wrote that tshuva. The Satmar Rebbe and that agreed with him, Baruch Hashem. The only question is, where to do these procedures when it comes to harvesting the sperm of Kedema? That was the only debate. But everybody was makabal that. And that's why today, IVF is universally accepted in the Hasidic world and the Lithuanian world. I'll tell you, historically, and I'll let you go, many, many years ago, there were in this type of stuff initially was very popular, based upon Rav Moshe's contributions in the Torah Litvisha world. In the Hasidisha world, it was very, very unknown and not utilized. So many, many years ago, I've been in this for over 40 years, I remember I was asked by an organization that became later on called Eitan to come. They had a major idah for Hasidisha Yungalite in a major hotel in downtown Brooklyn, in which they wanted to introduce them with from Rabbanim from the Litvisha world the concept of IVF and things like this. So I was one of the rabbanim asked to lecture to them. So we lectured. It was a whole day. You had thousands of guys and gals in that community. The Nebuch couldn't have kinderlach. So the Weibelach said to us and to the ones who made this thing, there's one problem. I'm going to go home and tell my husband what I learned today and all the halachas, etc. But the problem is the kapalish you wear, his rug doesn't wear that kapalish, so he's not going to accept your psak halacha. But what we were able to do by telling them about all of this is that, as they say, mother, the necessity of mother of invention, they put tremendous pressure then on their Hasidish Peskim that they better start, you know, analyzing and getting involved in this. This ultimately forced the Hasidish world to get involved in this as well. And now there are Hasidish Peskim who have been trained and they know exactly what to do. And that's why Eitan primarily now takes care of the Hasidish world. And all these things I mentioned tonight, these permissible technologies, AIH or IVF or microinjection, all of this stuff has become a davar ha-normali in the Hasidish world. I remember once about 10 years ago, they wanted to rent out our brand new building, the Women's College in Manhattan on West 60th Street for a convention on this. And there were about 15, 20, 30 doctors with specialists in fertility that were invited to lecture. And they already did research the A time, which couples had to go to which doctor because which problem they had to hear him lecture to convince them to undergo the medical care to produce children. So I still remember there were thousands of Jungalite men and women. Every classroom in the building that was available had a special number and a special doctor, and you were assigned as a couple to go to that room to listen to that doctor to hear what they have to say. And had at that time already shown the haskam of the Hasidish Gedolish world. And that's what's happening today. Baruch Hashem.
There's men and women there.
Yeah. Men and women were there, yeah. I remember they asked me to address the Olam, you know, and you know, when they had a lunch, hasuk in between. But I still remember it. I mean, it was pella to see how orchestrated they are now. I mean, the A-Time is a magazine they publish every month to mechazik the couples. They shouldn't lose hope, you know, because there are people writing in. I had the problem and I was able to resolve the problem. So they do incredible work when it comes to the Hasidish world. But today, but you have to be careful who you go to. And the biggest problem is to make sure, especially doing the IVF, that you have proper hashgacha over there, hashgacha pratis, so nobody plays around with the sperm and the egg and they use somebody else. That's what you have to be careful with today.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.